This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more.
Oh, baby, oh,
I thought that was Ray Charles myself. And that is not that. That's Buster Poindexter singing Hit the Road, Jack, a Ray Charles favorite. And it's from the movie Grumpy Old Men. And how do I know that? Because my buddy told me. Big Ed tells us that it's really Buster Poindexter. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. We are Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice, and we never know how we're going to start our show. We always start with a little song. And so you get a song and you think it's Ray Charles, and it's not. But I really am Paul Molloy, and it really is Wednesday, June 17th. Thank you for joining us. In a few minutes, Ed Heiselmeyer will join us from the Great Heritage Foundation, and we're going to talk about how subsidies for Obamacare are actually making the cost worse for the people getting the subsidies. Now, how does that work? We'll talk with him about it. Also, the head of the Southern Baptist Convention is warning the Supreme Court they will not be the final word on gay marriage. They will not be the final word on gay marriage. We're going to talk about that as well. And Jeb Bush, Donald Trump, since we last did our show, now officially running for president, and Hillary Clinton is in some email trouble again, this time because of the connection with one of her confidants. We're going to talk about that. Freedom Works. We come to you 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Radio Network. Tell your friends about us if they enjoy a libertarian perspective on things. And by that, we mean the concept of individual freedom. That's what we are all about. That's what the Declaration of Independence was all about, as it was our Constitution. So thank you for joining us. If you'd like to phone in, 866-826-1340. It's toll-free, 866-826-1340. Our website, which we invite you to visit, thefreedomworks.com. Thefreedomworks.com. Go there. You can also podcast our different programs. Big Ed sets it up. Just click on the podcast button, choose the program you'd like to listen to, thefreedomworks.com. Well, we're going to talk with Ed Heiselmeyer in a few minutes. He is he's their expert at the Heritage Foundation for Health Policy Studies. And the Supreme Court, as you may know, is going to hand down its decision in a case called King versus Burwell. This is about whether or not the states that did not sign on to set up their own health care exchanges are entitled to subsidies from the federal government, and whether or not those subsidies are actually helping or hurting the very people that they're being given to. So I think you're going to find it very interesting. Please stay tuned for that. In the meantime, the government cannot verify nearly $3 billion, with a B, $3 billion, in the subsidies distributed through Obamacare. The very thing we're going to be talking about. They can't verify them, putting significant taxpayer funding at risk. You know, as soon as I heard that the IRS was going to be overseeing all of these tax penalties if you didn't sign up for Obamacare, I knew that this thing was never going to work. Anyway, the Department of Health and Human Services and their Office of Inspector General released an audit yesterday. It found that the agency did not have an internal system in place to make sure subsidies went to the right people. Jeez. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, it's called CMS, apparently their internal controls did not effectively ensure the accuracy of almost $3 billion in aggregate financial assistance payments made to insurance companies under Obamacare during the first 4 months that these payments were being made. Why am I not surprised? Is anything else working very well in the bureaucracy of our federal government? I don't think so. Now, apparently the agency said they did not have a system to ensure that financial assistance payments were made on behalf of confirmed enrollees and in the correct amounts. So what were they doing? Just sending out checks and hoping that they were correct? It says here, in addition, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, CMS, relied too heavily on data from health insurance companies and had no system for state-based exchanges to submit enrollee eligibility data for financial assistance payments. So, it's one more boondoggle in the healthcare situation. We're going to touch on this thing about the problems with hacking. This is another problem with our federal government, is the hacking situation. If it isn't one snafu, it's another. The federal agency that was hit by a cyber breach, putting potentially millions of government personnel files at risk, has had a long history of failing to meet basic computer security standards. That's what an investigation has now found. An assistant inspector general with the Office of Personnel Management, his name is Michael Esser, testified before the House Oversight Committee that a lot of the people hired to run the agency's IT department had no computer experience whatsoever. That's exactly what we need. Do you have any computer experience? No. Good. We have a job for you here. I mean, this is getting ridiculous. Esser was among several officials testifying on the cyber theft of private information for millions. I think every single federal government employee has had their personal data compromised. Can you believe that? That's millions of people, just millions. Anyway, enough about this. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Obamacare subsidy snafus.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then you'd know why I feel blue without Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, Gallies. I love you, Peggy Sue.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Lightning fans, there's no better time to reserve your 2015-16 season tickets than now. Season ticket members get the best seats, the best discounts, playoff priority, exclusive player access, and more. Reserve your 2015-16 season tickets by calling 813-301-6600 or visit TampaBayLightning.com. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the Thunder.
Have you been struggling with family conflict, depression, or trauma? Has something been keeping you up at night, causing excessive stress and worry? Tune in to Moments of Clarity every Wednesday night at 8. After over 10 years as a psychotherapist, I realized how important it is to take the stigma out of seeking professional help. So tune in Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. The call to me can be a great first step. It may just be exactly what you need to hear.
This Independence Day, Frazier's Air Conditioning says time to remember our troops overseas who can't be with family as they stand to protect our country. Letters, cards, and care packages help to let them know we care. Let's reflect on the meaning of their bravery and show our support through our prayers. That's from Frazier's Air Conditioning, your complete air conditioning contractors with a reputation for quality work at prices you can afford. For an estimate, call 727-442-9204. That's Frazier's Air Conditioning in Clearwater, license CAC058237. Saying USA all the way.
Some people don't believe in mermaids. Hope that's not you, because they exist at Wickiwatchee Springs State Park off US 19 and State Road 50, just north of Spring Hill. Since 1947, the magic of the mermaids have been entertaining visitors at the 538-acre Springs Park. Come and watch in the 400-seat submerged theater, The Little Mermaid Show at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. daily. Wickiwatchee State Park offers mermaid shows, reptile shows, boat tours, and swimming in the pristine spring at Buccaneer Bay. Wickiwatchee State Park is a perfect backdrop for wedding receptions, birthday parties, picnics, meetings, retreats, family reunions, or just to relax on the white sandy beach. Step back in time when things were much simpler and enjoyable. Spend the day at an original theme park. Call 352-592-5656 or log on to wickiwatchee.com for upcoming events, hours, and ticket pricing. Wickiwatchee Springs State Park, where mermaids do exist.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Well, that'll be the day. We're back on Freedom Works. Thank you very much for joining us. We're delighted to have Ed Heiselmeyer join us. He is, he's the health policy expert, basically, for the Great Heritage Foundation. And, Ed, thank you for coming on to Freedom Works to talk a little bit with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I was just reading a story, I don't know if you heard it before we came on here, about the fact that the federal government cannot even verify the $3 billion, about $3 billion in subsidies distributed through Obamacare. It's getting to the point that we've totally lost control of what is going on with health care, and this is just one small part of it. But you are saying, and the Heritage Foundation is talking about the fact that these Obamacare subsidies, these subsidies that are currently going to help the poor people in the different states, are not actually helping them pay for their health care. What is going on there?
Well, they are helping them pay for their health care, but the point is that Obamacare actually does other things to make insurance more expensive, not only for those people, but for millions of other Americans as well, and the subsidies simply mask that effect. So basically, there are insurance rules and regulations and benefit mandates that Obamacare imposed on the individual and small group market, meaning group plans for employers with 50 or fewer employees. And in the 34 states that would be affected by the Supreme Court case, that's 21 million people are in those plans. But as of last year, but only about 3.5 million of those people actually got any subsidy. So the point is that for every person that got a subsidy to offset these cost increases, there are four people out there in those states who didn't get a subsidy.
I got you.
The argument that we're making there is to say if folks are worried about those who are going to lose their subsidies potentially if the court rules to strike down the administration's interpretation, that's appropriate. But let's also remember that for every one of those, there are four other people out there who also need some relief as well. And that's why we're saying that anything Congress does should start with saying, look, we're going to make health care less expensive, not more expensive. We're going to start by rolling back the things that Obamacare had that made it more expensive. I mean, that's one of the sort of original sins of this legislation, is they set out to reform the world's most expensive health system and started off making it even more expensive.
Yes. Well, when you add regulations and all of the government bureaucracy that has to be involved in overseeing it, it's just going to make it more costly. I mean, that's common sense, right?
That's actually only a small part of what they did. I mean, they actually required, basically to pay more and cover more and things like that. And they did it in a cost-increasing way. So let me just give you a real simple example. A colonoscopy for colorectal cancer. It's a great thing to have for people, who are over 50. As my physician friend said, look, if everybody did that, we could eliminate colorectal cancer. Now, there are a couple ways to do it. One would be to say, every so often you have one as the preventive services recommendations are. And here's a fixed amount, you know, equal to the average. Go out and find a good value provider and have it done. That would be a way that would incentivize patients to not only get appropriate care, but shop around to keep the cost down. Obamacare doesn't do that. It just says to employers and insurance plans, well, you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
100%. Well, okay, then what's to stop the providers from charging more of the patients for being completely indifferent to the cost? These are, you know, in other words, you could do the same positive thing in a way that brings down costs as opposed to drives up costs.
Mm-hmm.
That's the largest thing. I mean, there's tons of that in this.
Sure. But doesn't this all come back to the very simple statement that healthcare is a product just like anything else in the market? And the more you leave it in a competitive arena, no matter what you think of entitlement, the lower the cost will be because of the competition, and the better the product will be because everybody wants you to come in and use their services.
Yeah.
Does that rule change in healthcare?
No, it doesn't change in the healthcare system, and we're seeing that all the time.
So the simple thing, I wish somebody would stand up and say, you know, here's what we're going to do about Obamacare. We're going to make sure that it does not continue. We're going to allow the free market to come back. And that's the way that everybody will be serviced with a better product at a lower price, including the very people that Obamacare is intended to help, which it doesn't really help. I guess nobody has the courage to say that.
Well, no, it's not that they don't. I mean, we say this sort of thing all the time. But, you know, there's lots of details on how you're going to do that. I mean, and frankly, when we talk about free market, let's keep in mind that a lot of American healthcare is private, but not really a market-driven system. In other words, if your employer's health plan is paying for the whole thing and you don't really care about the price,
that's true.
Your incentives aren't there. Let me give you some examples, though. I mean, of the stuff that's going on right now. People are shifting, and physicians are shifting, to the idea of paying for primary care, not specialty care, like if you need an operation or go to the hospital, just primary care, you know. A general practitioner, internist, maybe an OBGYN if you're a woman, or pediatrician for the kids, you know, primary care practice. What's called direct primary care, where the doctor says, you know, I'm out of this mess. I'm not going to take any more insurance. How about this? You just pay me a monthly fee like you pay your cable bill, your Netflix, and you've got on-demand primary care, okay? Just like you have on-demand Netflix.
Absolutely.
And you know what? The prices are like for that is like $135 a month or less for 66% of those practices.
Sure.
Some of them are $50 or
more. Well, let's be honest. What this does is it almost opens up. It's not a black market, but a doctor will say to you, you know what? If you pay me cash and we don't go through the regulation process with Obamacare, I'm going to charge you less for this.
Well, that's right, because they're getting rid of the cost.
Of course.
They don't have to, you know, and you're getting rid of the cost.
But this comes back down to just doing it. I mean, just being honest about it and just saying it's like any other product. You know, the people that say it's an entitlement, no, it's not. Somebody has to work to do it for you.
Right.
Somebody has to get paid. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, and so here's the interesting thing. When I talk to physicians who are doing this, and by the way, this is, you know, in fairly out-of-the-way places. I mean, this isn't just in major urban areas. I mean, I was on a panel in Mountain Home, Arkansas, in the Ozarks a year ago. And there's a physician doing it there. You know, lovely area.
I bet it is. Yeah.
But it's not exactly, you know, the middle of Philadelphia or something.
No.
And you know, here's what he said, and then I heard the same thing from other physicians, like one in Florida, you know, other places. He said, you know, look, not only is he doing this sort of retainer medicine, direct primary care, but he says, look, say you need some lab work done, you know, blood tests or something. He says, I could write you the order if you want to go off and, you know, if you have insurance you want to pay for it. He says, but if you don't or you just want to do it through me, he says, I've done a deal with Quest Diagnostics in his case, and I will just send it to them and they will do it, and I will pass it on to you at cost. So instead of a couple $100 billed to your insurance, you know, it's $25.
Yeah.
So not only are they reducing the cost of their own services, but they're taking costs out in other places as well. And that's the kind of thing that we want to see and encourage. And so one of the things is to make sure, and we and others are looking for places where, you know, the law might not really have caught up with the market and it needs to be changed. So, for example, if a physician does that, well, there's a certain amount of risk. You know, if I say, well, for $130 a month, I'll be on call, you know, you might use me more, you might use me less. There's some risk there. So here's the question. Are they a, quote, risk-bearing entity subject to state insurance regulation?
Oh, boy.
Well, the answer is no, they shouldn't be. And so, you know, we and published a paper on this, and based just on that, several states have cleaned up their, you know, just amended their code to make sure that it's not. And I and the state conservative think tanks are looking at doing that in other states as well. So these are the kinds of small things. But, you know, once you lay the groundwork for that, then this is a very attractive proposition for both providers and patients, and you sort of go around all of this mess.
We're talking with Ed Heiselmeyer. He is a senior research fellow for health policy studies at the Great Heritage Foundation. Ed, initially, was the Heritage Foundation in support of the health care in Massachusetts, the Romney care in Massachusetts?
What we did, because I was involved in that, is then-Governor Romney reached out to us for assistance and advice. And the other thing you have to understand is the situation he had was that the state of Massachusetts had been dumping about $1.3 billion a year, half of which was federal money, half of which was Massachusetts state tax dollars, on a couple of so-called safety net hospitals on the theory that they were taking care of all the uninsured. Now, that's a heck of a lot of money. And when Romney got in, being the kind of, you know, business guy he is, he looked into the numbers. He said, well, how many of these people are uninsured? You know, how many people do we have? And, you know, how much money? And because there's no accountability with this money. And they found out, and he says, well, you know, we have a couple hundred thousand people, and we're dumping. Good grief, you know, for that amount of money, we could basically buy all these people a policy.
Yeah.
And take the money away. So that was the core of their plan, and that was what they were looking to do, and it was really centered on a Medicaid reform.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where we came in is we were actually, and this is where people need to understand the history. I was the guy who came up with the health insurance exchange as a way to define contribution employer plans. In other words, instead of the employer picking the plan and you only getting what the employer gives you, how about the employer gives you the money and you pick what you want, which is kind of what they do with 401ks, you know, in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is we could never get big business to do it because you always had a VP of HR who thought they could do a better job of buying, you know, health care for the herd of cattle. I'm sorry, employees.
Yeah.
But you could get small business. So Romney looked at that and he said, you know, this kind of solves my problem because it does two things. One, if I'm going to take, you know, this $1 billion, instead of sending it to three different hospitals, I'm going to distribute it to 200,000 people. I need a mechanism to do that, right? Two, I can offer this to small businesses as a way to get out from, you know, having to all the burdens of picking and running their health plan. So that got incorporated in the legislation. Now, remember, Romney was a governor, Republican governor, in a Democratic-controlled legislature who could override any veto. So, you know, there were limits on what he could do. So at the end of the day, we thought that what he did was a progress. And frankly, his original proposal was much better than what, by the time the Democrat legislature got through with it. That's where, by the way, the individual mandate came in. Romney never had that. He didn't propose that. He said, look, you know, we're not going to make you buy insurance, but we're going to make you take responsibility because for paying your bills, because now we've gotten rid of the excuses.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say you can't afford it. We've got a program for that. Legislature was the one that put the mandate in. But anyhow, you know, be that as it may, we thought that that was a you know, given that it was a blue state, a reasonable.
Well, you're saying it was.
And Utah then went on and did a much better version in a red state, you know, a couple years later, which we also worked on.
Okay. Well, you well know that liberals point to the Heritage Foundation and say, you know what, they supported a socialized medicine in Massachusetts. And, of course, the details are never given to anybody. And so they go, well, then, you know, therefore they should be supporting Obamacare.
But, well, and this is the same sort of thing. I mean, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, especially with the exchange, as I said, I created the exchange. It's kind of like the guy who invents the hammer and people use it to go around breaking windows. And he says, wait a minute, no, that's not what I invented
yes.
it for. You know, the exchange was designed, as I said, you know, to define contribution, to take this sort of, you know, system where you buy in bulk for everybody and people get one size fits all and turn it into personal choice. Now, the interesting thing is that, you know, two things. What the left did in Obamacare is they reversed it. They went and created, imposed the exchange on the individual market. Never in anything we or any other conservative ever did on health care did we say we needed this for the individual market. Why? Because you already had choice in the individual market. You already had e-health insurance. You didn't need that there. This was, you know, so you see how they completely did it the opposite way. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the interesting part. Once Obamacare passed, though, what did the private market do? Well, those HR VPs got overruled by the CEOs, who now said, why the heck are we doing one size fits all? Let's just go with private exchanges and defined contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening today.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, the bottom line is that when the federal government as a middleman comes in between a product, you know, between the person that wants the product and the person that offers the product, it's always a mess. It's always going to be more expensive. It's always going to be, there's not going to be, everything goes wrong there.
You're generally true, but it's particularly true in this case. I mean, as a general rule, you have to make sure that you minimize. I mean, if this is the whole, think about it this way. It's like education reform. You know, everybody wants every kid to have education, but that doesn't mean you have to put them all in government schools. What you can do is you can say, here's the value of what the taxpayers are paying. If you're poor, you take the money and you find the best school for your kid, okay? Well, it's the same thing in healthcare. If you do it at that level, then it's hard for, if it's very simple, then it minimizes the ability of the government to screw it up. And the problem in Obamacare is it's the farthest thing from simple. I mean, I literally cannot, having drafted legislation for both Republicans and Democrats along these lines for 20 plus years, I could not come up with something more complicated than what they actually passed in Obamacare.
It's amazing.
To me, you know, people are all upset about the cost and the ideology, which I understand, okay? But as somebody who's this close to it for 25 years, who actually writes this legislation, you know, I was just over a meeting with members the other day on drafting, you know, some provisions, you know, for their bills in response to the court case. At a technical level, this was just unbelievably bad.
It's like creating the Frankenstein monster when you start out with good intentions.
Oh, my God. It's stuff. I mean, you know, A, it was overly complicated. B, it was half-baked in some place. I mean, there's stuff in there that it's like roads that go nowhere. I mean, for example, there's so-called shop exchanges for small business to buy. They don't even define what that is in the legislation. Why? Because they were trying to get Olympia Snow's vote, and she had a small business health options purchasing bill, SHOP, and Harry Reid took the title in a couple of sentences, and that was it.
Oh, my goodness.
That's how badly this bill was done. I mean, the co-op provisions, the consumer operator, I mean, this was cooked up by, you know, Byron Dorgan, who's no longer there, who was a North Dakota Democrat senator. And, you know, they're reinventing the member-owned mutual insurance company, and it's kind of like reinventing the wheel but making it square. I mean, because they say, well, the first thing is, you can't spin it off of another insurance company. Well, that's the easiest and simplest way to do it. You know, if an insurance company wants to convert and say, hey, instead of being stockholder-owned, we'll be member-owned. Or instead of being, I belong to these insurance companies on other areas. I mean, State Farm Mutual is my auto insurance. That's a member-owned company. It's a mutual company.
Yeah.
It's a co-op. We already did this. This has been around for 150 years.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You didn't have to reinvent it. And then they said, well, we can't have anybody who has any interest in the insurance industry involved. Oh, great.
Yeah,
people set up an insurance company and have nobody who knows anything about it involved. And then they said, well, because you have to be nonprofit, you can't sell stock to raise money. You can't borrow to raise money because who's going to loan to a nonprofit with no assets and no income? So you get government grants. But then you can't spend the government grants on marketing to tell people that you exist.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I mean, here we go. I mean, it's bizarre. So let me cut to the chase with you, Ed. What is the Supreme Court going? How do you feel the Supreme Court will come down on King versus Burwell?
I have no idea.
None. really
I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I have no expertise in this area. I mean, some of my colleagues in our legal studies division have clerked for, you know, appellate Supreme Court justices, and even they are, not sure how they could do it. I mean, they certainly think that, it's a case of statutory interpretation. And as somebody did point out, he said, look, if this was statutory interpretation with the same set of facts, but, you know, some other law that wasn't as politically charged, then it would probably be
a slam dunk.
Yeah, or close to it, yeah.
In other words, what you said is what you meant, and therefore...
And it's not our job to fix your mistake.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
And that's kind of, you know, there's a lot of precedent for that on the court, because if you go the other way, then courts are very leery of getting dragged. But in the end, it's so politicized, I don't know.
I know what you mean. Ed Heislemeyer, thank you so very much. It's really a pleasure to talk with you, and with your expertise and experience in all of this, you know, to get an inside view of what is going on. I hope we'll be able to talk with you again down the road.
Oh, sure. Be happy to do it.
Thank you, Ed.
Thanks.
Ed Heislemeyer of the Heritage Foundation. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to talk about Jeb Bush and Donald Trump. Won't that be fun?
There you go, baby. Here am I. Oh, will you left me here so I could sit and cry? Well, golly gee, what have you done to me? Well, I guess it doesn't matter anymore.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Baker's Roofing Incorporated salutes the men and women in uniform who have answered the call for our freedoms. Let's give them a hero's welcome they deserve, as they have fought hard around the world. American troops are our angel of protection, so salute them proudly. That's from Leroy, his family, and staff at Baker's Roofing Incorporated, who says, for a hole in your roof or a whole new roof, call 727-446-1400. They're the best around, hands down, so call 446-1400 for all of your roofing needs. That's Baker's Roofing Incorporated in Clearwater, saying, fly your flags high.
The city of Dunedin introduces baseball done our way. Start with a morning on our pristine beaches. Next, off to downtown for some unique shopping. Then a bit of lunch at one of our many award-winning restaurants. And now, time for an afternoon game at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium. Finish the day off with a sunset cruise on the Gulf. A day in Dunedin. A day done our way. For more information, go to dunedingov.com.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity products you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network, for personal service, you could call Pete Greenway at 501-538-3160. That's Pete Greenway at 501-538-3160. And remember to tell him Lola sent you. Or you can go online at tantalkhealth.com. That's tantalkhealth.com. Here's to your health and longevity.
If you're in the market for your next car, then the place to shop is AutoShopper.com. You'll have access to hundreds of dealers right here in the area, and you can search over millions of cars nationwide on AutoShopper.com. AutoShopper.com is in hundreds of locations in the Tampa Bay area. Find your next car by taking advantage of all the power and reputation of AutoShopper.com. From your desktop, you can read car reviews, automotive news, calculate payments, use our tools to research, and get a Carfax vehicle history report at AutoShopper.com. This is the publication to pick up and read when you're looking to purchase your next car. Log on to AutoShopper.com and search for your special vehicle. And if you want to sell your vehicle, then advertise it in AutoShopper.com magazine. The readers can view a picture of your car and call you directly. It's all happening at AutoShopper.com, your auto buying and selling source. Pick up the magazine today or log on to AutoShopper.com, the premier source for car buying or selling. AutoShopper.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Thank you for joining us on Freedom Works this Wednesday, June the 17th. Boy, the month of June is moving merrily along. Have we gotten any hurricanes yet? I think we do have one out there in near Texas. I wonder if it's going to be a strong hurricane season. We always worry about it down here in Florida. And we're in month one of our hurricane season. So far, so good on our side of the ocean, but we will find out. Well, you know how we always talk about how these different government agencies never end up accomplishing the things that they are intended to accomplish. And the FDA, the Federal Food and Drug Administration, is one more example of that. They have now announced they're going to require manufacturers to phase out partially hydrogenated oils, trans fatty acids. Now, manufacturers have been using fatty acids, if you want to call it that, to prevent food from spoiling. But a lot of doctors say that that is not healthy. And they say that, like saturated fats, trans fatty acids raise bad cholesterol in people. Now, that may very well be true. But do you know the phasing out of trans fatty acids would have happened a lot quicker if the FDA was not involved? You know why? Because if we didn't have an FDA to monitor food and drugs, all of these things that we discover in the private sector laboratories of the businesses that sell these products come to light even sooner and are moved more rapidly on. It's just like, as an example, when we discover a new drug that will cure some disease or help, you know, slow it down or whatever, the Food and Drug Administration actually makes it takes so much longer for it to come to market because it has to go through this process. This process that includes politics. You know, there are people on the FDA that will look to see if a drug that's coming through benefits the people that they have been backed by as opposed to the people that somebody else has been backed by. So in the long run, many times, a drug will be shunned that could help you or will be slow to get to you. And think about all of the people that end up dying because they do not have access to a drug that finally gets on the market after 5 or 6 years. A bureaucracy like the Food and Drug Administration will slow all of these efforts for people. So this is why all of these agencies, if you left them in the private sector, it's like, do you remember Underwriters Laboratory seal of approval on different products that you would buy? And you would look at that and you would go, wow, that's good. And you would feel a little more comfortable about buying it. Well, it's like the Underwriters seal of approval. If you leave these agencies in the free market, they are the ones that will get these trans fatty acids or whatever else you want to talk about out. Get the information out on it. And believe me, no company that makes a product wants to be caught or stuck selling something that will be bad for the people they are selling it to. There is nothing worse for their success or survival than having something happen like that that will ruin their reputation. They'll go out. And competition does that for you. It will keep the best products for you, lowest prices, and healthiest products, lowest prices. So just a little talk about that. Now, we've got two more presidential candidates. You know, I can't keep track of this anymore. What do we have, 410 Democrats that are now running for president? Well, Donald Trump yesterday announced that he is going to be a presidential candidate. And 2 days ago, Jeb Bush made his official announcement. We knew that Jeb was going to be in there. We weren't so sure about the Donald because he keeps threatening to become a candidate. Hasn't he been threatening this in the last couple presidential elections? Anyway, he's declared himself a candidate. He says, I'm officially running. He was doing it, by the way, in the Trump Tower. He says, we're going to make our country great again. You know what? When you listen to him, you kind of nod your head in agreement with what he wants to do because he's kind of no nonsense. I mean, you know, he's going to do this, he's going to do that, you know. He's not going to take any guff from anybody. I mean, would it be that were true, you know, and that you could do it that easily, you know, sort of like in a movie. But in a strong pro-business, pro-military speech, he vowed to stop the Islamic State. He vowed to keep Iran from building a nuclear weapon. He vowed to repeal Obamacare. He vowed to build a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. He vowed to repeal Obama's executive orders on immigration. And he vowed to spend more on infrastructure. He said nobody could be tougher on ISIS than Donald Trump. He said, I'm really rich. In other words, I'm not going to be beholden to anybody because I don't need their money. He says he's worth about $9 billion. My God, Ed, between you and me, we barely have half that amount. But he's worth $9 billion. And he's 69 years old. Here's the thing. Do you think he's going to wander around all the different primaries and make himself available and shake hands? I don't think so. Do you think he's going to leave New York to go out and do the rubber chicken circuit that you have to do to go and become a candidate? You know what I mean? Do you think he's going to go around shaking everybody's hands like all of the other Democratic candidates are going to do? I don't think so. But you know what? It's kind of fun to have him. I'm glad he's going to be around. You know, he does kind of shake things up, and he does tell them like it is. I mean, really, if you listen to him. I don't know this thing, though. He says he's going to take the oil from ISIS. Well, what's he going to do with it? Is he going to ship it back to the United States? Is he going to have our people run all of the oil in Iraq and Iran? I mean, how does that work? He's going to take the oil from ISIS. That, to me, is kind of interesting. I know ISIS is doing bad things, but what's he going to do with the oil? Is it his? I mean, it's kind of crazy. Anyway, let's take our break. We're getting closer to giving you, this is interesting, the top 10 greatest opera singers.
Where you going, baby? Here am I. Oh, well, you left me here so I could sit and cry. Well, golly gee, what have you done to me? Oh, well, I guess it doesn't matter anymore.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Tuesday night, things got away from the Rays very, very early.
And there's a high drive to deep right field. It's gone, but by how much? This one lands. I didn't even see where it landed. Towards the top of the stand. Did it hit the back wall?
He might have hit the D-ring and stayed up there.
My goodness. A titanic homer by Clint Robinson. It's 1-0 Nationals.
And they found that what goes up doesn't necessarily come down. There were plenty of hits for the Nationals. They collected 23 in a 16-4 win. All wasn't entirely lost as the Rays did get a few in the ninth inning.
The runners go again in the 3-2 pitch. Line drive to left field and deep. Going back and Decker. Gone! Home run! A three-run homer for Rene Rivera.
And the homer off Drew Story. Now tonight, the Rays will send Matt Andrees to the hill. Airtime on the Rays Baseball Network at 6:30. With a Rays report, I'm Neil Solons.
Catch the Rays all season on the Rays Radio Network. For tickets, visit RaysBaseball.com.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Just listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all...
Arg, matey! When it's time for lunch, when it's time for dinner, when the show's over, when the day's over, when it's time to chill, where do we go? Over to Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub. It's literally in our backyard, right in back of the WTAN studios at 700 Eldridge Street, just north of downtown Clearwater. Just look for the broadcast tower. Nancy's food and atmosphere get rave reviews. The laid-back patio is a great place to hang out, dine, and listen to live music at night. And Nancy's one of the friendliest proprietors in town. And now, Nancy is serving Sunday Jazz Brunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Brunch served with Eggs Benedict, crepes, waffles, lox and bagels, shrimp, oysters, and a build-your-own omelet. That's all at Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub, 700 Eldridge Street in Clearwater. That's right where Eldridge crosses the Pinellas Trail between Myrtle and Fort Harrison. Call 446-3717. 446-3717.
You're listening to the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Thank you for joining us here on Freedom Works. As promised, I want to talk a little bit about the Southern Baptist Convention. The president of the convention is warning the Supreme Court that they will not be the final word on the gay marriage issue. Says this is Ronnie Floyd. He's the elected leader of this group, which is, by the way, the nation's largest Protestant denomination, Southern Baptist. He says the Supreme Court is not the final authority, nor is the culture itself. He says the Bible is God's final authority on marriage, and on this book we stand. Now, his comments were met with quite a bit of applause, of course, because he was surrounded by Baptists and standing ovations in their get-together in Columbus, Ohio. He said, while some evangelicals may be bowing down to the deception of inclusiveness of same-sex marriage, he says, we will not bow down, nor will we be silent. He said, we do not need to redefine what God himself has defined already. So, Southern Baptists, you know, are obviously very, very strong in their belief in the sanctity of regular marriage between a man and a woman. And the Supreme Court, no matter what they rule on this, to Southern Baptists, will not make much difference. It will be interesting, and we've talked about this, but why do they not allow the gay marriage issue to be kept in the states? If they had done that with abortion, things might have been a lot easier. But they didn't, and they forced abortion on all 50 states back in 1973. Now it looks like there's a good chance they will force gay marriage on all 50 states, rather than allowing that concept to be considered in each state by the people themselves. What is wrong with that? This is a behavior, as is abortion. It's not some sort of genetic thing like a race, right? All people are equal under the eyes of the law, whether they're black, white, brown, Hispanic, Oriental, or anything else. And that's different. But this is behavior. And this is why, in my opinion, it should be more of a states' rights issue. You cannot legislate behavior from the Supreme Court. You really can't. I mean, actually, you can't even legislate it from state courts. But at least a state court is a lot closer to the people themselves. And it would have made a lot more sense if they had done it that way. Well, I want to talk with my buddy Big Ed, because since I last did the show, our beloved Lightning lost to the Chicago Blackhawks on Monday night in a 2-0 contest. The Blackhawks ended up winning in 6 games, Ed. Now, you did predict, I have to admit, you did predict that you thought the finals between these two teams would go to 6.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the wrong team.
Yeah.
So tell me, it was a lot closer than it might sound to people that had not watched it, right?
You know, I kept saying all week, for the last 2 weeks, this was compared to a heavyweight fight, kind of like Balboa and Creed. You know, I wanted to hear the announcers go, Creed, now it's Balboa, now it's Creed, now it's Balboa. And it just went back and forth that way. And, you know, it wasn't until the series was over that we found out there was some very important injuries on the Lightning. Tyler Johnson's wrist.
Right.
And that explains why he wasn't shooting very well.
He's one of the famous triplets, right?
Yes. Yes. And then Bishop, the goalie, turns out he had a torn groin.
Yeah.
You know? But
I mean, we suspect
it's not an excuse, but they just, you know, hey.
Yeah. Now, quite frankly, the Blackhawks had some guys. Johnny Oduya was playing with basically one arm.
Right.
Through him. There was a guy by the name of Roosevelt. He was one of their key defensemen that didn't play at all during the series. He was out. So, you know, you're right. And injuries are a part of the game. God knows there were other players on both teams that were nursing injuries that continued to play. The bottom line is that it was experience versus youth and talent. I mean, both had talent, but one had more experience. The other one had more youth by a few years. It was a great series. I think it was one of the best Stanley Cup series, and I've seen a lot of them, that I can ever remember. Two teams that were so closely matched, only a one-goal difference for almost every moment until the final game.
Yeah, and even though it wasn't a high-scoring series, it was just
even more
interesting.
Exciting,
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, they were really banging at the net.
You were on the edge of your seat every single moment because you knew that the next goal could turn the game completely
Absolutely.
Around.
So, Nothing to be ashamed of, definitely on the Lightning side.
No way.
And a lot of players, we talked before, there's a lot of players both on, you know, the Blackhawks said, hey, this Tampa team's going to be back.
They did.
For a long time.
Oh, they admired them. And they said, for sure, this is the team on the rise. This is the team to watch. Anyway, congratulations to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And, of course, to the Blackhawks, mm-hmm. too. Well, that leads us, of course, what a great segue between hockey and opera. They are so close,
oh,
right?
Absolutely. Same audience. Keeps you on the edge of your seat.
It would have. But to think about it, wouldn't you have loved to, now be honest, wouldn't you have loved to have Luciano Pavarotti singing the Star Spangled Banner before a Lightning game?
Maybe that's it. And then he could leave.
Then he could leave. Well, we're going to find out whether Luciano is one of the top 10 greatest opera singers of all time. This comes from CatalaxiFiles.com that has been apparently involved in the opera world for a long time. So without further ado, number 10, Joan Sutherland. Do you remember her, Big Ed?
Nope.
She only died a few years ago. Australian soprano helped bring Pavarotti to fame. One of the most important sopranos of our time. Number 9. Nobody will remember her, but her name was Kirsten Flagstad. She died in 1895 to 1962. Norwegian dramatic soprano. She was a trendsetter. And back then, you had to throw your voice. There were no microphones or anything else. Number 8. A new one, relatively speaking, Natalie Dessay. She's a French soprano. Her voice is strong and clear, and she is winning acclaim all over the world. Number 7. You should remember this guy, Placido Domingo.
Sounds kind of familiar.
Well, he's Spanish. Okay. He's still alive. He was one of what they called the three tenors. You remember that, three tenors?
Yeah.
There was Carrera, there was Domingo, and there was our buddy Luciano Pavarotti. Those were the three tenors. Number 6. Good old Emma Calvey. Unfortunately, we don't remember her because she was born in 1858 and died in 1942. But she was a French soprano, and her voice was described as absolutely extraordinary. All right, number 5. Juicy Jorling. It almost sounds like a striptease artist. Juicy Jorling, a Swedish tenor. It's a man. He was born 1911, died 1960. Did a lot of opera in Stockholm, Sweden. Number 4. The Great Caruso. Have you remember hearing about the name Enrico Caruso?
Enrico Caruso.
He's the fourth greatest of all time. He was born in 1873. He died in 1921. There were movies made about him.
Yes.
He's perhaps the most famous of all of them, actually.
He was in one of Leslie Nielsen's Naked Gun?
Naked Gun movies?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, good old Enrico Caruso. He deserved to be there, as a matter of fact. Number 3. Excuse me. Maria Callas? Do you remember Maria Callas?
Mm-mm.
She was a great Greek opera singer, a soprano. She died in 1977, by the way. And people do remember her. She was on television an awful lot. She had a great personality and a great voice. Number 2. We do come to Luciano Pavarotti. He's the second greatest opera singer of all time. He was born in 1935. He died in 2007. We all know what he was like. I thought he was the best I ever heard. And the number one greatest opera singer of all time is...
Kenny Rogers?
You're close. And I thought it was going to be either Kenny Rogers or Elvis Presley, but neither made it. It was Craig Emerson. It is Craig Emerson. He's still alive. He was born in 1954. Australian, baritone. He is known for his aria. He's also known as the singing tradey. So there you go. Well, Freedom Works, my friends. We'll be back on Friday. Thank you very much, and have a great day. Be with you.